Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 16th of August. Monday at 9 is All Things Political, and one of our favorite All Things Political guests is with us this hour. If you've never heard him before, you'll find out why within the first 2 minutes. Professor Julian Zelizer is a professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University. He is the author of Arsenal of Democracy, The Politics of National Security from World War II to the War on Terrorism. And he has another essay collection coming out very soon, I believe. It's forthcoming this fall. The essay is The Presidency of George W. Bush, A First Historical Assessment, and he's the author of the forthcoming Jimmy Carter. We're going to talk about a number of issues. We will look at what last week's elections say about incumbents. Is it a little bit better, the picture for incumbents, than we thought it was? We will look at the last American combat unit in Iraq. We will be talking about the president's comments on the planned mosque. This is going to be the focus of our entire second hour, but we can't dismiss it as we talk about all things political. The first hour, humanitarian crisis, huge crisis in Pakistan, which will be the focus of 9 o'clock, but we'll touch on that this hour as well. You're welcome to join this conversation, as you know, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email address is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. And just a brief comment for those of you who joined us at the baseball game last week. We had a great time. It was very hot, but as long as you had a lot of water to drink, the people who gathered were just wonderful, really, really nice people, and we had a good time. So thanks, people, for coming to that. It's an event we will do again, I'm sure, and pictures will be up Wednesday of this week on our Facebook page. So keep looking if you want to see yourself on Facebook. And who doesn't? Professor Julian Zelizer, it's been a while since we spoke, but you're always such a delightful guest. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me again.
Yeah. Why don't we start with this? We're going to devote the second hour to this program, and it's beyond me why there are these huge protests, so clue me in here, about this planned mosque near Ground Zero, but also there are protests of construction of mosques all over the country right now. And I'm listening to some radio on the way in here this morning, and there's really all this hatred and anger. The president weighs in, and some are saying, you never should have weighed in on this. Why shouldn't he have weighed in on this and given us one of those teachable moments?
Well, that is the argument that, you know, even though this is an issue about New York, the mosque that's being built near the site of the 9/11 attack, that this is something the president did have to address. The media is asking him about it. There have been protests with many arguing that it was insensitive to build a mosque at the site of this attack. And there are many who are supporting the development of this mosque as a sign of interdenominational discussions and dialogue. But it is now blown up into a full-scale national issue that is consuming some of the president's time. And again, it's one of these issues that I think the president doesn't have full control about whether or not he wants to deal with it. Now he does.
Right. Well, it's not just New York. It's problematic enough for me in New York, but it's also in Wisconsin and California and Tennessee. There are proposed mosques in many places, and they're going forward, but not without a great deal of debate. And some very prominent people like Newt Gingrich and Sarah Palin who are making this a huge political issue. Forgive me, but isn't this America?
Yeah, I mean, in some ways, what's interesting is the intensity of the anger is greater now about the mosques than it was in those period after 9/11, when there was a lot of talk, even by President Bush, about the need to separate those who committed the terrorist attacks from Islam altogether and not to make this about Muslims in the United States. And the president originally had been very clear on that. And in some ways now we're seeing an intensification of the debate over the Muslim religion here in the United States. Part of it is politics. I mean, part of it are national leaders like Palin using this issue as a way to, you know, attack the administration, to bring back questions about the war on terrorism in an era that we're focused on the economy. Some of it in New York, you know, I think there's a debate about why have the site there as opposed to other parts of the city. But it's taken an ugly turn, I think, in parts of the country. And now it's about the Muslim religion rather than about 9/11.
Right. So is this a large political liability for the president at this time?
Well, I don't think it's the kind of issue that's going to turn voters. I think most voters are going to judge this president right now based on what he is or is not doing for the economy. But it is an issue I think his opponents will certainly be able to use to make this part of a storyline about not just Obama but Democrats and the war on terrorism. Are they tough enough? Are they willing to take the steps that are really needed to win this? And you can see how this would play into those arguments. The second liability is it just shifts attention away from other issues. I mean, this has been a Democratic problem for a year and a half. You know, whenever they want to talk about one thing, their opponents are pretty good at talking about another. And they can't talk about financial regulation or their accomplishments. Now they're talking about mosques. And so I think in both ways, again, it's part of a problem that the Democrats have to deal with. And with Obama, who took kind of two positions, the first was a more strident defense of the mosque in New York. The second was a more legalistic argument. Some of his supporters, it plays into fears they have about him, that he's a bit Clintonian, and he'll speak different ways depending on his political needs.
Well, he also is a president. I will never forget the speech that he gave about race and also the speech he gave in Cairo about a year ago that really endeared him to people in other parts of the world who hadn't been our friends during the previous administration. He has the ability to do an address that will look at this issue and to have one of those moments which will give people a better understanding of Islam and a better understanding of what his real thoughts are on this. It seems to me as though he puts himself in a difficult situation if he is political about this.
Absolutely. And I mean, those are the two kind of keynote speeches in terms of his taking difficult social domestic issues about religion and race and making them kind of national conversations.
Right.
But in general, that's not been part of his presidency. Jonathan Alter writes about this in his book. Kind of the irony is the great orator has not done a great job communicating since he's been president, and he hasn't really focused on those kinds of speeches. But that said, he's in a difficult position because at this point, if he makes a speech about it, it is not just a teachable moment. It will be presented as him politicizing this issue. It will bring up all the questions that are emerging in this debate at an even grander scale. So I think he's in a lose-lose position, frankly, with this issue.
Let's look at, just for a moment, because I was struck by the figures here, this humanitarian crisis in Pakistan. One-third, I was watching the news last night, of the country has been destroyed, 20 million people affected by these horrendous floods, and the UN asking for assistance, and they've only been able to get just a fraction of what is needed. Why are they having a hard time securing funds for this crisis, do you think?
I'm not sure. I mean, I think several parts of the world, including the United States, are focused on other issues right now, whether we're talking about debt or economic issues. And this is not good times for a lot of the world. And they're not willing to put money into a kind of notoriously difficult country. So they don't have money or they don't want to devote resources. And it's also an unstable country. So there's always fears about where the money will go. But this is, many say, a particularly important crisis, the obvious humanitarian tragedy that we're seeing, and also in terms of the potential for terrorists in a country where they are extremists to take advantage of the horrible conditions this will cause.
Aren't those pictures just astounding? They're horrible.
They are horrible, and we keep wondering, you know, whether we're talking about New Orleans or now Pakistan. There's always the question of, you know, how does the world sit by when these things happen?
Right.
And yet we always seem to do it. And the pictures are very stunning, but again, they're having difficulty raising the money.
Let's look at the elections, some of the primaries last week, and the question is, has anti-incumbent fever begun to break?
I'm not sure anti-incumbent fever was ever there. I mean, it's been something the media has been reporting on, the emergence of the Tea Party, the threat that incumbents face. When Arlen Specter fell or Robert Bennett of Utah fell, you know, there were many stories. This is the year you're going to have huge turnover. Thus far, only six incumbents have lost. At about, I think, 282 federal incumbents who faced elections. So it's not really a landslide, and there's not really evidence that there is a huge threat to most incumbents. Senator Michael Bennett won in Colorado, and many people are saying the mood has calmed. There's clearly in polls a lot of anti-incumbent feeling, a lot of throw-the-bums-out-of-office feeling, but I don't think it's clear yet that's going to translate into how people vote for their own representatives. It's the classic, you know, issue. People hate the institution of Congress, but they love their representatives.
Right.
I think a lot of that is still there.
The last American combat unit in Iraq leaving, but the situation in Afghanistan is not very good.
Yeah, I mean, we're still going to have at least 50,000 in Iraq, so it's kind of an end to combat without a full end to combat. They're, you know, renaming what the troops are going to be doing, but Americans still will be, a large number of Americans still will be in Iraq. So I think some of the talk about withdrawal is a little overblown, and obvious reasons the administration wants to say it's fulfilling its deadline. Afghanistan's a mess. General Petraeus is now trying to talk to the media and calm people about the war strategy there, but you're hearing criticism not just from the left but from Republicans about whether anything good is coming out of all the fighting that's taken place since 9/11, and especially in the last few years. Petraeus is already making remarks that the promised deadline of Obama won't be met in Afghanistan, and many Obama officials have kind of winked when they said, you know, that deadline is something to look forward to. So Afghanistan remains this huge commitment, financial and obviously physical, where Americans remain. It's, you know, it's one of the wars of George Bush that has become a war of President Obama.
And Professor Zelizar, why is Afghanistan such a mess?
Well, you know, we're not the first country to discover it. It's a decentralized, fragmented country that doesn't have any tradition of centralized leadership. So in a situation like that and on a difficult military terrain, it's hard to achieve a new government or some kind of stability, which is what the U.S. wants. It's also an area mired in corruption. So you send financial aid to Afghanistan, and a lot of it never reaches the people who need it. So it's a very difficult country to get a hold of, and there's nothing to get a hold of. And so when you're fighting that kind of war, you know, the outcome is not going to be great. At best, you get some kind of moderate stability.
We're going to welcome phone calls for you, and we'll take them momentarily. Several are already on the line. Professor Julian Zelizer is our guest this hour for All Things Political. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. He's a professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University and author of many books, including a forthcoming book on Jimmy Carter and an essay collection, The Presidency of George W. Bush, A First Historical Assessment. Here's our phone number. Please join us, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email address is talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the second hour of our program this Monday, Othman Atta will be joining us, an attorney and past president of the Islamic Center of Milwaukee. We'll be talking about the protest of construction of mosques, including in Sheboygan. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that, but these kinds of protests are taking place all over the country. We will talk about why they are and welcome your phone calls. It's a big topic right now. So that's coming up, hour number two. Julian mentioned Jonathan Alter. Jonathan Alter will be our guest. He's going to be in Milwaukee on Thursday, so he will be our guest the first, oh, darn, is it the first hour or the second hour? Chrissy, do you know, she's on the phone. Rhonda will let me know. It's one of those hours on Thursday. Jonathan Alter will be joining us. All right, let's go to phone calls. Jim is our first caller from Milwaukee. Hello, Jim.
Yeah, hi. I hope that people will take out a piece of paper to write this down, because I think this is really important topic for people to look into. And it could be a topic that could be a subject for you or Ben in a presentation. And it's important because it illustrates the problems that we have and some of the underlying information that gives people less and less reason to believe in the business corporations and the government itself. And the article is in Bloomberg Markets, August issue, and it's called Wachovia's Drug Habit by Michael Smith. And it points out that the Mexican drug cartel launders $39 billion a year in drug money, and this money, of course, has killed more than 22,000 people since 2006. It also points out that this drug money that has been laundered enables people to drug dealers to purchase drugs and planes, weapons, safe houses, and, of course, to buy people off. And Wachovia was involved and actually admitted that they had been involved in laundering $378 billion from 2004 to 2007. And this has a tremendous impact, of course, these drugs, because it's estimated in the article that narcotics cost the United States economy $215 billion a year. 20 million people used drugs in this country. And since 1970, the Bank Secrecy Act has required banks to report on all cash transactions above $10,000 to regulators. But no bank, Wachovia or Wells Fargo, which now owns Wachovia, has ever been prosecuted for violating the Bank Secrecy Act or any other federal law. And what the Justice Department usually does on these things over the years is to have deferred prosecution agreements in which the bank pays a fine and promises not to break the law again. And they've been protected from being indicted by a variant of the too-big-to-fail theory, suggesting that if they were indicted, there'd be a big panic on the stock market about this. But the bottom line is that there's no, as Jack Bloom, who has been an investigator on for the Senate, has said, there's no capacity to regulate or punish them because they're too big to be threatened with failure, and they're willing to do anything that improves their bottom line until they're caught.
All right, let's get a response here, Jim. Professor Zelizer.
First, it's a very interesting article. I had seen that, just the kind of sheer quantity of money that's being laundered. I think they also mentioned Bank of America. And this is a big problem. The failure to enforce the kind of disclosure rules has been a big problem. And I think, you know, this plays into, I mean, there's the issue itself. And this goes back to the bailout and some of the anger that it caused, meaning this administration started where the last administration left off with the financial bailout, and it basically saved these banks. This is a variant, a problem that many people haven't talked about, obviously drug laundering, but more important for many people were all the practices that led to the deterioration and the collapse of the economy. And the government stepped in for these institutions without a lot of kind of rules in exchange. And there are many questions about the new financial regulation, whether it will do as much as promised. And I think this gets to some of the underlying anger in the electorate about the administration and some of the questions that have been raised about the health care reform and other pieces of legislation. Why were these big institutions that did some bad things saved with no strings attached? And so from drug laundering to mortgages, I think it's the same question.
Thanks, Jim. Barbara in Superior. Hi.
Oh, hello there. It's interesting because my call more or less reflects the previous caller. Who is benefiting from the war in Afghanistan? Companies, individuals, governments? It's been going on so long, and it seems to be tied with the drugs. That's my comment. Thank you.
Thanks, Barbara. It has been going on so long, hasn't it?
It has, and again, though, from the start, everyone knew this is not easy terrain. Other governments have learned this before. I think there's, you know, two arguments. One is it was to break up the Taliban there and the ability of Al-Qaeda to form, and the second argument, some say, is to have troops in that region not because of Afghanistan, but because of Pakistan, to kind of keep an eye on them. But it's been going on long, and you have just many people across the aisle saying we're not really obtaining what we want. And this includes people like Richard Haass, a Republican kind of foreign policy establishment type, who's not very polemical at all. And so, you know, we've hit a point where the commitment is pretty significant over time. And I think many Americans, as the polls show, want to see some kind of results and some kind of objective if we're going to continue doing this.
Thank you, Barbara. David on the road. Hi, David.
Hello. I would like to comment about the mosque being built in New York City.
Okay.
Historically, whenever a Muslim army has had a great victory, they build a mosque to commemorate it. And seeing how this fellow, this imam that's wanting to get this accomplished, what he believes is not really moderate, maybe he's wanting to commemorate their great victory. And I don't think, you know, for example, the Dome of the Rock in Israel is built on the site of the Jewish temple, and it commemorates a great victory. So I'll hang up, let you comment.
Yeah, well, this gentleman, the imam, is the author of What's Right with Islam is What's Right with America. He's vice chair of the Interfaith Center of New York. He said in the New York Daily News, my colleagues and I are anti-terrorists. He denounces terrorism and the 9/11 attacks in particular. He conducted sensitivity training for agents for the FBI. And this Park 51 will have a room that is a memorial to the victims of September 11th, 2001. I mean, isn't this the kind of Professor Zelizar, isn't this what we want, somebody who has an understanding of how to combat terrorism? I'm sorry, this whole thing just escapes me, but that's not who he is, it's my understanding.
Right, I mean, from I don't know much more beyond what you said about him, but that is the impression that he is genuinely interested in those issues and committed to overcoming what caused 9/11 rather than celebrating it. But that said, I think in the political climate we're in, it was impossible to escape having a mosque here that it would trigger this kind of anger. And, I mean, the kind of irony or unintended consequence is that by putting this here, it might end up stimulating more anger and hatred about mosques around the country.
Right.
Than would otherwise have existed.
Yeah.
And so I think both can be true, but we're in a bit of a mess now, and not just about Obama, but about getting around some of these feelings that the country had been relatively good about avoiding, frankly,
mm-hmm.
since 9/11, and here we are, and it seems to be deteriorating.
Yeah, it sure does seem to be deteriorating. And just a reminder, we may take one more call this hour, but we're devoting our entire second hour to a discussion of this issue. So rest assured that your phone calls will be welcome. The second hour of the program, our guest will be Othman Atta, who's an attorney and past president of the Islamic Center of Milwaukee and was involved in the controversy surrounding the mosque in Sheboygan, Wisconsin. So it's not just New York that's facing this. He will be with us, hour number two. 800-486-8655 is our number. And let's talk a little bit about jobs, which we've talked about for months and months and months and months. There are so many people still unemployed. I'm struck by these stories about people giving free backpacks and school supplies or cutting the taxes on those because people are lining up to get these in places throughout the country. Why doesn't the president take on, and should he have taken on, a major jobs bill early in his administration? Should he be doing that now?
Well, I mean, in terms of early in the administration, I think when historians start to look at what happened early on, again, I think two big questions. One, was TARP and not pushing for financial regulation earlier, you know, as that program was extended, the financial bailout. And the second was, why not make that job stimulus bigger? It seems big to most Americans, but many economists were saying it was not nearly big enough given the severity of the economic collapse. And Many economists were saying if the stimulus wasn't bigger, if it wasn't over $1 trillion, it wouldn't have the effects we needed. And the money had to be dedicated to issues like state and local government aid and public works projects rather than just grants and some of the programs the money went for. And I think many feel Obama made a big mistake, and so did Congress, by not pushing harder earlier on when he had that capital to get something bigger. And as a result, you know, we still have this horrible jobless figure.
Yes.
This is not a recovery, I think, for most people. What can he do now? You know, I do think he needs to at least try something with jobs. I don't know if he has the political strength anymore to get it. But, you know, when he was extending unemployment compensation benefits and Republicans were filibustering, it was one area where Republicans did give in, and things weren't going well for the GOP on that issue. You know, people want help. And I think it's something the administration needs to devote more time to. Healthcare is fine, financial regulation's fine, but most Americans are thinking about their jobs and their mortgages and their future. And if the president doesn't deal with that or doesn't look like he's dealing with it, I think these approval ratings just get lower.
Yeah, I think you're right. And what kind of help are people looking for? What could be offered?
Well, I mean, the most basic is jobs. I think, you know, people are happy to take government jobs even if they don't like government. And there's a lot of infrastructure programs right now all over the country where, you know, parts of a lot of America is in need of repair. And I still think there's something to the old New Deal public works model that is very attractive. You're paying people to do work, and people are okay with that. And that would at least put people on the job. And the second, I think state and local governments just need a lot more assistance right now. We're hearing stories from California to New Jersey to other states that they just can't handle their bills right now. And I think that's another area where people would see what government money could do. I mean, you're talking about strengthening schools and strengthening parks and roads. Americans are okay with that, even if it, you know, costs a lot. But I think those are two areas where the president needs to keep pushing.
And tell me more about, was it last Friday a bill was signed that gave more money to schools to keep teachers from being laid off?
Yeah, that was, I think, a week ago. The Republicans were against it. I'm actually not sure, to be honest, on the status of the bill offhand, where it is. But there, I think Democrats are trying to really contrast themselves with the Republicans. This is money that directly goes to schools. Even Governor Christie of New Jersey, who's been really pushing to cut school funding, has accepted the money from the government. And I think, you know, Democrats can use this to point out some of the hypocrisies they see in the GOP and to show where they're willing to give assistance that the Republicans are not.
Our number is 800-486-8655. Professor Julian Zelizer is our guest this hour for All Things Political. He is professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University. We've talked about the economy for so many weeks now. I guess I'd like to ask you, too, what do you think, if anything, the president should do to try to create more jobs in this country to really stimulate the economy? Is that the number one issue as far as you are concerned? And how do you rate performance when it comes to that? We go next to Paul from Columbus. Hi, Paul.
Hello. Good morning. How are you today?
Fine. How are you?
I'm just fine.
Good.
Listen, I had a comment, and then I had a question for you. I'll start with the comment. You're talking about the Ground Zero Mosque, and the Ground Zero Mosque to Muslims worldwide, including Muslims in the United States, is nothing but a poke in the eye with a sharp stick. It's a supremacist monument. Now, I know you don't like to hear that, but that's the truth, and that's what it is. And I urge all your listeners to do whatever they can to read the Quran and also the Hadiths, which are as big a part of the Muslim religion as the Quran itself is. And the Quran and the Hadiths, they're online. You don't even have to buy anything. I'd also like to urge readers to read whatever they can get their hands on of the writings of a Muslim Brotherhood fellow by the name of Sayyid Qutb. Much of the thrust of Islam in this country is due to the Muslim Brotherhood, which is a terrorist organization in all aspects. They try and present themselves as not being terrorists.
So you think what maybe we should tell Muslims in this country to leave?
Well, I don't think we should tell Muslims in this country to leave, but I think Muslims in this country should be put on notice that they will not be allowed to agitate for Sharia in any aspect in this country, because devout Muslims believe that Sharia should supersede the Constitution of the United States. And I urge Americans to find out what they can about Sharia. A friend of mine who is from Pakistan and who is an apostate Muslim said that there's no such thing as a really moderate Muslim. He says a moderate Muslim is a failed fundamentalist, basically being a person who can't abide by what some of the teachings of the Quran are and decides instead they want to maintain their faith, so they'll pick and choose. And if you're a true Muslim, he says you're a fundamentalist. Now, that's from an apostate Muslim himself.
All right, I urge you to listen to the second hour of the program. This kind of thought is certainly out there. It just is dumbfounding to me, Professor Zelizer. What's the genesis of all this, do you think?
Well, I mean, look, first of all, the thought is out there, and now it's an issue. And so the debate will happen. And I think the calls reflect that. Part of this gets into certain attitudes about the Muslim religion, certain fears about the Muslim religion that have been there. Maybe they've been contained until now and are emerging, or maybe they've been stronger than we acknowledged. And we've had these kinds of fears about many religions throughout American history, whether we're talking about Catholicism, where there were many fears back in the 50s about what a Catholic president would do, or other religions like the Jewish religion, where anti-Semitism has been very strong throughout a lot of American history. Part of it does come from the very specific issue about the mosque on 9/11, and I think now that's just getting conflated in a lot of these discussions. Was it, you know, a good idea to put it right there? But I think it's opened up a kind of ugly debate, it's one we need to have, but we also really don't want to have. And I think, though, that members of both parties are going to have to deal with it now, and hopefully we can bring it to a resolution sooner rather than later.
Yeah, well, it's a scary debate, too, I think. We're going to welcome more phone calls. Please, we're going to move on to this topic for a full hour, the second hour of our program today. So if we could concentrate, and we do want to hear all of your phone calls, if we could concentrate on some of the issues for the remainder of this hour, including the floods in Pakistan, the primaries that took place, the Obama presidency, the economy in the United States right now. We would like very much to concentrate on those areas. And some that we haven't brought up yet, the war in Afghanistan. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email address is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. Hour number two of the show, Othman Atta will be with us, past president of the Islamic Center of Milwaukee and an attorney. He will be joining us and we'll talk about all of that controversy, hour number two. Rhonda came in and said that Jonathan Alter is the first hour of Thursday's program. He's in Milwaukee on Thursday and will join us. We've already had him on to talk about the promise, but he will be with us to talk more about the Obama presidency because a lot has happened since that book was written. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Professor Julian Zelizer is our guest, professor of history, public affairs at Princeton University, and Doug is our next caller. Hi, Doug.
Hello, how are you today?
Fine, Doug. You?
Pretty good.
Good.
Beautiful day here. In
I know.
Wisconsin.
It is here in Milwaukee, too. It's gorgeous.
Say, I got a question on jobs. I'm a public works employee, and I know for a fact that our America's infrastructure is crumbling, and we're just a walking time bomb waiting for something disastrous to happen. And I know that water and sewer mains across the country need to be rebuilt in a bad way. I don't know why, you know, they can't put all these unemployed people helping villages and towns across America rebuilding the infrastructure. And what about that Conservation Corps? Why can't that be reinstated in this day and age?
Well, those are good points. Professor Zelizer.
It could. I mean, I think there's some kind of fear there's been within the administration that proposing something like a Civilian Conservation Corps or some public works administration would, you know, bring back charges that this would just be a form of corruption and people would give jobs to those who didn't need it. Traditional attacks that you always have on public works programs. But I think they might have made a not just political mistake, but more importantly, an economic mistake. Those infrastructure needs are very good, are very great, and it's somewhere where you can immediately put people to work. The second area, you know, people have been talking about is trying to invest in creating new kinds of industries. I mean, part of the reason the jobs aren't coming back isn't the recession. It's that they're never coming back. They are now in other countries, and companies have been shifting their workforce to other parts of the world. So some are arguing Obama needs to invest more in, you know, research clusters and job creation idea centers in parts of the country to see what kind of industries we could come up with that would be located here. But in answer to the callers, there's no reason we couldn't have done that.
Mm-hmm. Maddie is next in Waupaca. Hi, Maddie.
Hi. I just like to say that I really have sympathy for the people in Pakistan with the floods. And it's my understanding that the world is not responding in its usual way to their need. And I think that maybe some of it has to do with that it's a Muslim country. People that always amazes me, people that go to church every Sunday, and they just don't get Jesus' message of love and how he told about the Good Samaritan story, that to love your neighbor as yourself, and about how he told about how there were so many religious people that passed the person on that was beaten and laying alongside the road, and a guy came along, and he wasn't particularly religious, but he helped, and Jesus said that was the person that pleased God. And so I think we should all open our pocketbooks and our prayers to help those people in Pakistan.
All right, Maddie, thanks so much for the call. And we will be talking about that issue tomorrow at 9 o'clock. Scott is next from Toma. Hi, Scott.
Hi.
Hi.
You know, everybody's talking about a lot of these jobs, creating jobs and different things. And what maybe I'm looking farther in advance than just tomorrow, but with all these natural disasters, there's a lot of things that's going to happen to the world food supply. It's going to be dwindled down. The Philippines was hit with bad floods, so there went a rice crop. Pakistan is being hit. There goes the food supply there. China is being hit. Mm-hmm. There goes food supply. Russia and America with our floods in Iowa, different places. The world food supply is dwindling very quickly. There's a whole avenue of not only job creation, but, you follow what I mean? Though?
Yes.
That.
Professor Zelizer.
There's actually, I mean, one area of jobs we didn't talk about that many people thought Obama would give more attention to, because he talked about in his campaign, were green jobs, meaning.
Yes.
Jobs that were related to environmental issues, whether weatherizing homes and cities to organic farming that could be sold, cheaper than Whole Foods and at a more mass level. to solar and wind projects. And that was, it was part of the stimulus package, but it wasn't a huge part. Again, that's another area where we could combine two problems, meaning the jobless rate, but also some of the environmental concerns that are looming out there. But, you know, also at a certain level, Obama can't do everything. Neither can any Democrat or Republican. We have these crises, and we'll deal the best we can. But that does bring up this issue of green jobs, where I think is a third targeted area that deserves more attention.
Mm-hmm. And he does that every now and then. He's in Wisconsin as we speak at a plant in Menominee Falls that has as its focus green jobs, too. So he does that every now and then. But he could make, it seems to me, and in a very bipartisan way, a big splash in this whole area by really moving this industry forward, which may have something to do with all these floods, too, and all this extreme weather. So,
and it's also, frankly, for some states, incredibly lucrative. I mean, it can become a pretty important business in terms of running solar power plants and wind energy. And so a lot of states are interested in becoming the place where this is being done. It's actually a kind of manufacturing industry, not simply, a green industry. So I think, you know, again, but there's something in this administration with jobs that has, you know, kept them contained. Part of it is they use their political capital on other issues. I mean, it was health care where he spent a lot of what he had after that election rather than on these kinds of questions.
And our caller, Scott, enumerated some of the extreme weather, the Philippines, Iowa, China, Pakistan, Milwaukee. We were flooded horribly a couple weeks ago, Russia. Do you think that this is just happenstance, Professor Zelizar, or I know scientists are saying that it's probably due to global warming, according to yesterday's New York Times story. Well, what about that? I mean, this is frightening weather that's taking place, and it seems to me, and I'm pretty old now, that it's unlike what we've seen before.
Yeah, I don't know with the weather that we're seeing right now what causes it, and that would kind of take me out of what I know and be pure speculation. That said, the evidence about global warming is very strong, and despite all the talks of ClimateGate and challenges to the science of global warming, I think it's hard not to acknowledge it's there. It's a big problem. And other than this weather issue, it's a problem you don't always see. And so it's hard to build political support for it because it's not something that's immediate to most Americans. But the science is pretty overwhelming. And you know, climate change got really cut from the trifecta of the administration's health care, financial regulation, and climate change, which was put aside, and it's going to be hard to build support for it after 2010. And it's the kind of issue we keep, you know, kicking down the road. And unfortunately, it's an issue that actually needs immediate attention, but it's not clear where we're going. It's also an issue that will need attention from citizens. It's not simply a government problem. It's our problem. And this is an issue that hurt Carter when he tried to save us. And I think at some level, kind of Americans are going to need to change as much as having any particular government program.
Yeah. Thanks, Scott, for the call. Matt in Middleton, hi.
Good morning. Two comments. First one, when we were talking about how there was money spent on education and saving teachers' jobs, I think that the flip side of that was left off, and that's where the money came from, and that came out of the food stamp program. So I think it's going to be fairly easy for the Republicans to say Obama had a payoff for the education and the teachers' unions at the expense of those people who currently don't have jobs and are on food stamps because the money's coming out of that program. And the second one being with the green economy, if you look at Spain, because President Obama likes to look at Spain a lot, when they switched to and made a very big push into the green economy, they found that for every job in the green economy that was created, 2.3 jobs were lost in the traditional manufacturing and oil-producing industries. So I think that the green economy, while it sounds really good and it sounds great from a political standpoint, the reality is we need jobs in this country, and I don't think Americans are willing to wait to start producing windmills when we have oil refineries and we have other manufacturing facilities in this country that are idling because of potential green issues. And if we look in the past, geologic history, we can find that the temperature and the CO2 levels in this planet have been 6 times higher throughout history. So I don't think that we can directly say that we need new taxes and legislation because of man-made problems, because we can't conclusively say that man is 100% this cause. I mean, we can't predict the weather for 7 days, so I think it's really arrogant that we could come out and say we need new taxes and new legislation because of something that we think is being caused by man.
Professor Zelizer.
On the first issue, I mean, the Republicans have a problem because they haven't been strong supporters of food stamps. And there's many Democrats who are saying food stamps should be increased in terms of quantity because that's the best stimulative program we have. People have more food stamps, they will spend that. And Republicans have not been big champions of that. So I think they have a problem if that's the particular argument they want to make. In terms of the green jobs, there's actually many studies kind of disputing that claim in terms of that it takes jobs away from other parts of manufacturing. We have such a surplus of unemployed people right now. It seems that to put them to work on these kinds of projects will not take away from some of these other industries. If you're weatherizing a home, it's not going to kill the oil industry in Texas. And these are areas that can grow. That's also important. These are areas that we, you know, whoever masters the green economy, countries like Germany, are actually doing quite well with those industries. It's kind of a computer high-tech sector of our current period. So it's not just about the immediate future, but in terms of a long-term industry. So I think there's a lot of evidence that we could do quite well with that.
I was unaware. Are all of the funds for education, restoring jobs, et cetera, coming from food stamp program?
No, I had not heard that trade-off. I was assuming it's something that has been spread, maybe on conservative talk radio. But I was not aware that they were taking money from one program that Democrats have been defending very aggressively, actually. And again, saying those food stamps need to be raised to pay for the education.
We have time for maybe one or maybe two. We have some lines open. So here's the number. We can probably take two phone calls, 800-486-8655. Dave in Wisconsin Rapids. Hi.
Good morning, Kathleen, and good morning to your guest. My original comment has to do with Islam, but the most recent caller mentioned that this money is coming from food stamps, and I don't think that's true. I understand that money is coming from funds that are subsidies to corporations that they get for sending jobs abroad. So I think somebody better look into that. But a little historical perspective on building mosques. My wife and I traveled through Spain by automobile several years ago, and we spent a little bit of time in Granada. And, of course, we visited the Alhambra, which was the, I guess you'd say, ground zero for Islam in Spain, a beautiful place. It is essentially a museum and a tourist attraction now. But near our hotel was a large cathedral, a Catholic cathedral, and we read the history of it, read a little more about it, and found out that shortly after the Catholics, the Christians came in to Spain and killed who knows how many of the Moors and took over the city. They demolished, eradicated the Muslim neighborhood, which was an ancient neighborhood going back centuries, and leveled it, and right in the middle of it, they built this cathedral.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm not hauling water for Islam or Muslims, and I think there's plenty of blame to go around there. But it's an example of what has been going on for centuries that fuels this animosity, and we can continue to do it, or we can make the choice to not do it. If that mosque is built a couple of blocks, I'd suggest people go and look online and see an aerial photograph. You'll see that it's not at ground zero. That mosque is built, if they would show their Christian charity and allow it to go ahead, if it becomes a center of some sort of effort to take over our country, I think that could be dealt with at that time. But I should think we could give them the benefit of the doubt.
Thanks very much for the call. In about 20 seconds, Professor Zelizer, what are you looking ahead to this week?
Well, I think the mosque issue.
I think you're right.
Point, this is now the issue of the week, and
right.
It'll be interesting to see how the president or the Democrats deal with it. And two is we are now shifting to full midterm mode. And when everyone comes back from vacation in Washington, this is what is going to be the number one issue. Can you govern as the midterms intensify in the next 3 months?
Thank you so much for being with us. We love having you as a guest. Thanks.
Thank you.
Our guest, Professor Julian Zelizer. He's a professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University, author of a number of books. Look to the Presidency of George W. Bush, A First Historical Assessment, which will be published this fall, and also author of the forthcoming Jimmy Carter. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour. Thanks to Chrissy Pease for on-air production. Just a reminder that the mosques issue will be the focus of the second hour of our program. This is the Ideas Network.